Hello again, Chris Lee and Alfred Esmond here to do some Omaha talk. We got an SEC on SEC matchup, the only one that's SEC on SEC in the field. You got four teams here. These are the only two teams that are matched up in the first game. That is Texas A&M and Florida, a rematch of the SEC opening series, which Florida won, by the way. We will get into both teams, give you a preview and a prediction. Before we do that, a reminder, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Every stat, matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game is over, head on over to our online casino, get in on a game of blackjack or poker, unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today, get in on all the action, use the promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online where the game starts. Alfred, what a matchup we got here. A&M, what would be here? Florida, we did not. You got to see the Gators up close and personal last week in Clemson in one of the more unforgettable college baseball games we've ever seen. The Gators get an 11-10 win over Clemson to advance to get here as a three seed. The only team that's not a number one seed that is in Omaha. The Gators last weekend, and so was A&M in its own way, took a very interesting path to get here. And I know you had a lot of fun watching them in Clemson last week.
Yeah, the path they've been on has been away from Gainesville, which is rare for them this time of year. I mean, usually they play their regional and super regional in Concord Park, and that wasn't the case this postseason. And this is a totally different looking Florida team. I think I would like to say this is the Florida team we expected all year. What we're seeing, and really there's been hints of it. It just kind of hasn't popped up because of their pitching, but Florida's been a top 10 home run team in the nation all season. They have a ton of power hitters, and that came alive with guys like Ashton Wilson, Brody Dinay, Caglione, obviously, just going crazy and ballistic in Clemson. And really in that last game where they gave the entire country, you know, a treat with how they played. And I think they're going to be a tough team. They're going to be a tough out in this outing. It's a team who, if you were telling me they're going to make it out of this side of the bracket to the championship series, I wouldn't put it past you. I think they have the potential to do it. And yeah, I mean, top to bottom, the pitching's been on it with guys like Caglione obviously starting. He's been a, you know, shoe-in starter for them. Liam Peterson, and as well as Brandon Neely, who's been pretty much, I think, arguably their biggest story with how he's gone
many
pitches in games. And it's beyond jumbo reliever at this point. It's like a start within a game he has. So it's insane stuff they're doing. And they match up so tough with anybody they play just based off of, you know, at this point, Kevin O'Sullivan has his team putting it all together.
The offense is what we talked about most of the year. Everybody knows Jack Caglione, 33 home runs, going to be probably a top five guy off the board in the draft this summer. Ty Evans, their second best hitter, got hurt, but other guys have stepped up. Colby Shelton has now gotten to 20 home runs. Luke Heyman's gotten 16. They got the game-winning hit out of Michael Robertson, who'd been an on-again, off-again guy in and out of the lineup. Now the injuries forced him back in. Ashton Wilson, the guy who barely played all year, it's been a big hero for them in the postseason. Had a four-hit game not long ago. Brody Dinay, they kind of platoon at catcher and DH between Heyman and Dinay. He's got a dozen bombs. The offense was the talk of things. The Evans injury made them switch things up a little bit, and I feel like, you know, he's kind of come alive as Ashton Wilson lately and just been one of many unsung heroes for the Gators. But the biggest one, you mentioned him earlier, Brandon Neely, who makes Kevin Copps look like a lightweight with his durability lately. I don't know if you were around for Kevin Copps a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. when I felt like Dave Van Horn pitched him every game that mattered in multiple innings, but just an unbelievable job. But I mean, it's not just him. They've had other guys step up and give them three, four innings at a time. Frank Menendez, guys like that who didn't pitch a lot at times this year, have thrown some pitches here and there. Luke McNeely went two innings, gave up a run to get them a win. Cade Fisher's thrown a little bit, not been super effective, but I mean, they got Fisher Jameson. They got Liam Peterson. Those guys hadn't been great, and that's where Neely, again, covered for a lot of sins. But the Gators have got a lot of arms. I don't know what the count of pitchers we've seen them use in postseason play is, but it's got to be you know, nearing a dozen at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, no matter who they throw out there Friday, I mean, we're going to see a lot of guys, I think, coming out of the bullpen and pitching. My Friday starter for them, probably going to be Peterson, if I had to guess. That's kind of what it's been all season, but or at least this postseason. And I think, you know, you're going to see Brandon Neely out there. Obviously, he has rest, too, which is something Brandon Neely's probably not used to.
Yeah.
But he has a good – he's a good few days of rest now, and you're going to see him out there in the middle innings going up against this A&M lineup. And I think that's going to be – quite the battle. And you know, you talked about it too, you mentioned it at the very beginning, this was the first SEC series Florida played in between them and A&M and Gainesville, and they got a huge series win to kind of kick off, you know, some momentum, at least after having a brutal non-conference slate. And yeah, I mean, they're tested. They had the number one RPI heading into the tournament, and there's pitching coming off the charts from a lot of guys at the bullpen beyond the guys you mentioned too. Clemente's another guy who, you know, has provided some valuable time. He even has been known to get some starts every now and then as well, which is key. And I think, you know, top to bottom, it's a tough matchup for A&M because it's you can't give up the power to Florida. I think that's how they're going to beat you on offense. They just have a ton of guys that hit home runs at a very high rate. Beyond Caglione, I mean, you got Shelnut with 15. He's had good power this postseason. Colby Shelton's at 20. Cade Kirkland, who he kind of had a pedestrian super against Clemson, but 14 there. Luke Heyman had a pedestrian one as well, but he has 16 home runs. So I think that's going to be big. You know, if they can get to A&M's pitching like Oregon did a little, which we'll get into A&M's pitching in a second, maybe Florida can escape this with a win.
Yes, yeah, 7 guys with a dozen or more home runs. You don't see that often. And you mentioned the number one RPI strength of schedule. I mean, you look at the ERAs, Florida 6.16 staff ERA, and a lot of the individual ERAs were not pretty. You know, Caglione's their best pitcher, had a 4.71. You know, they had some relievers under that, but you know, Fisher Jamison was their best guy with a 4.35 over 60 innings. But the thing about Florida, Kevin O'Sullivan recruits arms that everybody wants. These guys are just really young. About half the guys who pitch for them or close to it are freshmen. So, you know, sometimes guys blossom late in the year, and these, you know, the talent was never really in question. I think it's just, you're in an SEC that's as offensive heavy as it's ever been. Throw in the number one strength of schedule, and that's what you get. But that also kind of explains a little bit why Florida's blossomed in the postseason. That tough road to get there, which almost broke them and almost didn't get them in the tournament. I think you're seeing that schedule and some of that experience for some of these young guys pay dividends, even if the numbers on paper for the year aren't super pretty. All right, let's get to A&M. You know that I've really liked A&M for a while. And speaking of unusual paths, Brayden Montgomery hurts his ankle, done for the year, and with the third inning of game one against Oregon. Mm-hmm. And that's a blow because Brayden Montgomery would be the guy that if you asked a casual college baseball fan who knows the roster a little bit, who's their best player, Brayden Montgomery would have been the guy, not just based on what he's done at A&M, but his excellent career at Stanford leading into that. So what happens? That causes a little bit of a switcheroo and you know, the – it just so happened that the guy who benefited from playing time, Caden Kent, as a result of Montgomery's injury, had the two hits in a 9-run inning. Yes, that's right. A&M scored 9 runs on 2 hits in the biggest inning it had against Oregon, thanks to a bunch of walks. That just kind of summarizes his team. Depth and guys who, like, if you are going to pitch to them, you better be in the zone because they don't chase. I've said all year, this lineup is a lot more than Montgomery. Jace Laviolette, one of the better hitters in the country. Just everywhere you look in that lineup is a dude who can hit, and then a couple more on the bench. And that's one of the reasons I've been so high on this team.
Yeah, and another guy who stepped up, who's a role guy alongside Montgomery, Hayden Schott, was huge against Oregon. He had I think, you know, depending on how the game ended, he was having a 3-for-3 day in a win over Oregon. And, you know, Oregon's a team that got to them a little bit in their own pitching. But I think late in games, A&M was able to scrape them out and scrape them by. And the hitting top to bottom has been there, and it's been money. I mean, you look at down the list, Jackson Appel, I would say, arguably takes the cake alongside Laviolette as one of their better hitters with a 330 average, 424 on base, slugging right around 550 with 10 home runs this year, 40 RBIs. He's going to be a guy you star on that lineup. Ted Burton is another guy who people don't talk about as much. His on-base percentage up over 450, near 300 hitting. I they're a team that, I mean, it's depth. Depth has been the name of the game for them, you know, late in this tournament with the injuries they've had. And even in their pitching, which we'll get into in a sec, they had a big injury there with Shane Sedeo, and they won't expect him back either. That was why he exited early. I found out on 11 pitches. So they're experiencing how much they're kind of, you know, looking at how much depth they have heading into Omaha. And I think I think they got to be comfortable because they don't have any reason to be doubting against it based off how they played against the Ducks. And, you know, they're seeing a team they've played this year, so they know what they bring, and that it's going to be quite the game between these two.
Yeah. Back to the hitting for a minute, you know, again, it was those All American level guys that got people's attention, but you mentioned Burton. I think it was he and Appel and Schott. Also mentioned those guys. I think they had 8 hits in game one. Some of the other guys didn't hit. Again, that was the game with the Montgomery injury hit. But that's how dangerous they are, is some of the guys that don't get the attention can beat you too. Caden Sorrell, another guy that I really love, that once, you know, I think a freshman, and he played very well at times. He didn't start the whole year, but was really impressed when I watched him. So very deep and talented lineup. They even run a little bit. You don't think of the Aggies as a running team, but Travis Chestnut stole 16 bases. Appel, I guess it was a year for running catchers. We talked about Devin Burks at Kentucky. He stole 15 bases. So, yeah, a team that can beat you in different ways, and also a team that's very athletic in the field. All right, I think I like the pitching just as much. The Sedeo injury is big because that was a spot where A&M has been weak, has been after that number one spot, where Ryan Prager's locked it down all season until the Super. I thought, hey, they slide Sedeo in that number two or three spot, which they did late in the year. That solves a lot of the issues. That's a big blow. The guys that will need to step up in this case, and you've seen them, they just hadn't pitched very well. Justin Lampkin, he's been better lately. I would presume he'd get a start. And Tanner Jones, the transfer, I think, from Jacksonville State, who's not been great in a while. He's had some good outings, but I think the formula for A&M is Ryan Prager, who's easily a top five pitcher in this league, going to be probably a second or third round pick. Didn't pitch at all last year with injury, but he's come back better than ever. Love that guy. So they got an ace. After that, you saw Chris Cortez has been really good in postseason. I think they're going to lean more on him. He's a guy that can throw a lot of innings at a time and be super effective. They got Evan Aschenbeck, who's probably best relief pitcher in the country. Had a 166 ERA, 65 innings. Again, like Cortez, can go a lot of innings. And then they got a lot of guys that go in shorter spurts, but are really good. Brad Rudas, one of them. You know, you've seen Brock Peary do some good things at times. Weston Moss. This is a deep staff, but I think they're going to lean on the combination of Prager, Cortez, and Aschenbeck. And if you get something else out of a Tanner Jones or somebody like that at that point, it's a bonus. But I think they've shown they can win without that.
Yeah, and, you know, the Sedeo injury stuff, I mean, Sedeo had a great season with a 2.96 ERA and 48 and two-thirds and, you know, an opposing batting average of 235. It's a tough blow, but I think, you know, Aschenbeck's going to earn his money as what we've deemed him the best reliever in college baseball, and I think he'll do it. And I think it's especially going to come, not saying he won't come in a Prager start, he absolutely could and probably will, but in starts where you see Cortez go out there where, you know, you maybe not necessarily get the same amount of innings. You'll see him go out there as well to kind of tag team with him in that game. And he could do it. I mean, he can go jumbo innings. We've seen him do it time and time again and really shut it down. And that's going to be very big. And I think, like you said, if you get Lampkin or Jones, you know, to get a good play out of them, that's only a bonus you add if you're A&M. And they can absolutely do it as well. I kind of like what they've done with Tanner Jones, or at least what they did last game with him, where he was a jumbo inning guy in relief instead of starting. It kind of fit him really good. You can even do Tanner Jones in the open if you want to, because you got other guys out of the bullpen like Badmev and guys like that who come in, and, you know, Brock Peary's another one, and they can come in and just kind of, work in miniature small outings as well. So they have plenty of options still pitching. Again, I think depth's the name of the game with the team, and it makes it hard to pick against them. And the pitching is where that I think that's pretty apparent as well.
Yeah, look, they had a dozen guys this year who threw at least a dozen innings. And so now you're losing one of them with Sadeo, obviously, but still, there's a lot of guys there who can still pitch. A&M was my pick to win this whole thing before the College World Series. Those are two brutally tough losses with Montgomery and Sadeo. I'm going to stick with the Aggies as my pick to win the national title. I'm a lot less confident about it than I was before. And I don't know how you can really be confident about anybody, because this is a College World Series that I think I can see anybody winning it probably, but Florida. I think that would be tough to bite off. But, I mean, we've seen some teams, Ole Miss a couple years ago, like Florida, last team in. You get hot, you get the right combination of guys. It can be done. I'm going to stick with A&M as my national title pick. Boy, I would have liked to see them do that with Montgomery and Sadeo, but I still think there's a formula in my head in which they can piece it together. Now, look, you don't win game one, you could be in some trouble, but I'm still going to ride with the Aggies, even with two big injuries. So we'll see how that goes.
I think if we're talking about this game, The Gators, I think, are obviously going to get Prager, I think, just to kick it off. I think they'll throw him out there against how dangerous this lineup is. That would be my guess. I don't see Ryan Prager had probably one of his worst starts against Oregon when he came out during that Super. I don't think you'll see that again. I mean, Ryan Prager, I think, has been the second best pitcher in this league behind Hagen Smith all season. And you're going to see that, when they play Florida. And Florida, I think if any team, if I had to choose a team to start with their backs against the wall in a loser game next, I think it's going to be the Gators. So give me A&M to win this game. As far as who I'm picking to come out of here, I mean, we forget we have Kentucky on this side as well, and Kentucky can really control the pace of any game they play. So if the A&M gets Kentucky, that'll be interesting to see how that goes with them, especially if Kentucky doesn't have Montgomery in the lineup to worry about, which is a big plus for them, when they throw a guy like Mason Moore out there if we get to that second game. So for now, though, just looking at this game and looking what's in front of them, because A&M has a tough team to play right now, give me the Aggies, just because I think Prager will have a shutdown game and kind of revitalize what he's done all year. And I think A&M will cruise through here with a win.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing this one. We will be wrapping up the action from Omaha. I'm going to be out of town the first couple of days, so we may do a live stream or something Sunday night to talk about. But either way, we will have you covered through Omaha. So best way to get that, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and enable your notifications so you can know when we put out some content. Anyway, for Alfred Esmond, I'm Chris Lee. Thank you for watching. We are Southeastern 14, presented by BetOnline.com.